Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
It is Monday night, July 9th, 2018. We are live on the Chair Shot Radio Network with the Raw Reaction. Good evening, everybody, and welcome. Afternoon, if you're listening to us on a delay, what have you. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst, making my return after missing last week due to a personal commitment. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Mr. Tony Acero.
Oh, hi, guys.
And the third man, Andrew Ballas.
Yo.
You know, the third man's actually appropriate. This is NWO Monday, you know.
But I'm not Mabel. We do not look alike.
The argument can be made. You do look pretty snazzy in purple, though, Andrew.
Aw, thank you, buddy.
So, did you guys miss me last week?
No.
Not at all.
He's lying.
I didn't think so.
He referenced you every other sentence. He missed his buddy.
I referenced you because you're an easy target.
I actually have a little something special I'm going to be bringing to the show next week. I'll get to that a little bit later on in tonight's broadcast. Let's just say our opening reaction to the Extreme Rules pay-per-view will have a nice little added bonus to it. We'll talk more about that, though, once we get to our predictions a little bit later on tonight. It is go-home time here on the Raw Reaction, as we are 6 days away from the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. So I say we not waste any more time. We get to this edition of Monday Night Raw, so that way we can get to our pay-per-view predictions. Our opening segment sees Roman Reigns starting to walk towards the ring, but being confronted by Bobby Lashley backstage. They get into a little tete-a-tete, and then Bobby dares Roman to call him out. Roman goes down to the ring and does exactly that, and it breaks down into Tony's all-time favorite segment, the full roster pull-apart. Tony?
First of all, how often have we seen this in recent, you know, just the last 2 years, they've burned it out. They burned it out a long time ago. That alone is bothersome. But then when you start to bring up the things that typically bother me about this, it just adds on to it. I don't want to go on a long rant because I believe I've done it quite a few times with this specific issue. But once again, we have people who, let me put it this way. I made a small comment in my report in the comment section, questioning why certain people, what motivates these wrestlers to, first of all, just be ready. I mean, are they all just right there by gorilla position, ready and waiting? And if so, why are they right there? Did Kurt Angle predict this? Did he just make a decision so quickly between Reigns talking to Lashley and Reigns getting in the ring? And he told everybody, drop your food. I know you're eating at catering, but I need you now. Aside from that, the reality that all of these wrestlers who seemingly don't really give a shit about Reigns and Lashley care enough to put aside their differences, such as Mojo and No Way Jose, to hold back, to save the main event of an upcoming pay-per-view, because they all give a shit about that, really. I mentioned that in the comments, and someone replied, they're just doing their job. Now, I have two schools of thought with that. Let's just say that hypothetically this man is correct and that these wrestlers are simply doing what they're paid to do, which is their job. Nowhere in the history of my entire fandom has anyone even made a slight comment towards a mandatory position of you are a part of a team that pulls apart any major main event that might ruin a pay-per-view in the future. I don't know what cause that would be. I don't know where that would be. But even if that asinine response had worth, all you would have to do as a writer would be to have one of your characters commentary, you know, the omniscient presence, simply say that just once ever. Say, like, you know, I highly doubt these people care, but, you know, due to their contractual obligation, that's why they're out here. And that would have been it. I still wouldn't have liked it because it's still a horrible crutch, but that's fine. Now, I don't think it's their job. I think that writers are lazy, and I think that they fall on things that are tropes, and that since Roman Reigns and Lashley are larger than life, why not do another pull apart? We did it with Taker and Brock. We did it with Brock and Roman. We did it with Brock and Roman. We did it with Brock and Roman. So why not do it with Roman and Lashley? It comes off eye-roll inducing. No one believes it. And in a beautiful metaphor, we see Roman Reigns being carried by the entire roster to assure that he is at the top of his game. I know that wasn't what they were going for, but it was definitely present. And this did not work, okay? What I will give them credit for, I got two people to give credit for. One is the crowd for eating it up and loving it. I will never deny a fan their enjoyment of the product, even if I don't like it. And two is Finn Balor, the sole wrestler that I have ever seen say, yeah, I'm here to stop a fight, but hey, there's Corbin, and I don't like him. I'm going to hit him. Sometimes that's all you need. That's really it. Like, why are you standing so close to Mojo, Jose? Why do Akam and Razor even give a shit about any of this? These guys don't care. That's not in their care. They don't give a shit. The authors of Pain are there to stop a fight? Really? Really? Just don't do that to me. And that's what segments like this do increasingly. They just insult you as a viewer and as a fan. It doesn't make me more engaged. It doesn't make me want to see the match more. It doesn't make me do anything but get upset. So stop doing it. We should hold a poll. We should write up, like, how many days until the next one comes.
I think I can do that because every episode of Raw is 7 prior, so we can go days without a pull apart. We can do, like, a running countdown here on the reaction. I will say that I absolutely enjoyed Finn Balor cold cocking Baron Corbin because, as Tony said, it's like one of the very few instances where a wrestler in a pull-apart with two other wrestlers whose feud he really shouldn't care about sees somebody he dislikes and is like, hey, I can get a shot in here. Wham! And proceeds to do so. Andrew, your thoughts on the opening segment?
I mean, Tony kind of covered most of it. Like, it's a pull apart. Like, what do you expect? At least the crowd was into it. I think the way it was, I guess, paced was awkward because you basically had Lashley dominate for 3 or 4 random pull aparts. Then they push Roman into the ring, and then finally the entire roster can hold back Lashley, but they get caught as Roman flies over the top for, like, the big dive onto a pile of people, one of which being Lashley, and suddenly that's all they focus on in every clip they go back to is Roman got the advantage at the very end when he jumped over top rope and then he decided to run down the ramp and hit him one more time. Like, how about the 8 times for, like, the first 5 minutes of that Lashley was just literally throwing half the roster off to the side and running over and beating the shit out of Roman. But I guess we should digress. Is that what that one is? Well, let's just move along from that. That didn't happen. Someone flashed the neuralizer from Men in Black. Nope. Let's just move along. Nothing to see here.
It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Super Roman.
No, it's a flying big dog.
Our opening contest on the evening is women's tag team action as Nia Jax and Ronda Rousey's best friend Natalya, and God, do they hammer that fucking point home, take on the team of Alexa Bliss and Mickie James. Nia and Natalya pick up the win when Nia pins Mickie James following the leg drop. The split second after the bell rings, Alexa's in the ring to crack Nia with a kendo stick. She proceeds to do so twice more before Nia tears the kendo stick away from Alexa. Alexa goes scurrying, and Nia snaps the kendo stick over her knee instead of, I don't know, using it as a weapon. Andrew, your thoughts on the women's tag match that opens the show in ring?
Meh. Like, none of the pairings make sense. Like, Mickey and Alexa should have just dissolved a while ago. I don't know why that's still a thing. Natalya and Nia don't make much sense, aside from the fact that Nia's kind of a face now. And whoop-de-doo. Okay, the kendo stick was, I guess, the callback to last Extreme Rules when that's how Alexa beat Bayley. So she was trying to say that's how she'll beat Nia. And then snapping of the stick was a metaphor, like she could snap her like a twig. Maybe if I don't know. Like, I really don't care. I think it's because Nia's involved, because Mickey's been enjoyable. She was decent in the match. Alexa's gotten better in the ring, and she is probably the best character in the women's division currently. And Natalya is filling a role, which I guess she's doing adequately. But every time Nia gets on the screen, I just don't care.
I do have a very strong urge to change the channel because I find myself in that same boat.
Basically, yeah.
Tony?
I wish that Rick was here to call Nia fat.
How about untalented? I'll go with that instead.
Sure.
Yeah, I like that. That one too.
I feel like the 30-second ending of the match where Nia was like kind of trucking everybody looked really well, but that's not something you could stand upon as a wrestler, the fact that you could have a 30 seconds of fury and be okay, because it looks good, because she looked into the match, she looked angry, she looked heated, she was quick, there were no mistakes, she almost killed someone in the best possible way, not in the worst possible way, and it was great, but that's not what Nia Jax is. She's not a 30 seconds of fury type person, and we're not going to get that at Extreme Rules either. She's just uninteresting. And her little promo immediately after the match was like, how many cliches can I string into one sentence without breaking or laughing? We get it. You're going to break her like a stick and this and that. Like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of tonight, not just this moment, but a lot of tonight was the lowest level of continuity writing where they did not try at all. That everything we saw was either Michael Cole throwing cliche after cliche, or, you know, every wrestler who had a promo saying things that just weren't funny or that were juvenile, such as, you know, Seth Rollins, or even the wrestling was kind of lower base. I don't know if it was just me, and I know we'll get to it, but I feel like Bo Dallas specifically was like just acting a fool. I'm not sure if it was on purpose or not, but he was like, and again, this could just be me, but it looked like he was like actually looking. It wasn't Shawn Michaels versus Hogan bad, but it was getting there. And again, that's just what I saw, but it was weird. And I felt like the entire show kind of felt that way, with, of course, the exception of the main event. But even that, we had to get through some bullshit just to get to it. And there were some issues with it, in my opinion, as well. So with regards to Nia Jax, I think this was just a small example of the larger problem with the show, where it was just literally everything from the moment the bell rang to the end of her promo was cliche wrestling build 101, and I'm just really, really tired of it.
We go back to a hype package over what has happened recently between Braun Strowman and Kevin Owens, and I hope you guys rightfully flushed that segment last week. Meanwhile, Kevin shows up into Kurt Angle's, I guess we'll call it, office? Kind of, sort of-ish, I guess? I don't know. Kurt's too busy playing Candy Crush Soda Saga. Kevin tells him that he's here to work and that he has connections with Stephanie McMahon, as well as a doctor's note that says that he does not have to compete tonight, so he's going to hang out in the one place in the arena where he knows he's safe, Kurt Angle's office. Didn't Kurt just get his ass whooped in his office like 4 months ago? Whatever.
That was 4 months ago. You're not supposed to remember that.
finally back into the ring, Mojo Rawley accepts No Way Jose's request for a rematch. Am I the only one who thought this feud was more entertaining when he wasn't accepting his request for a rematch? I like No Way Jose as a gimmick, but as a worker, he's not main roster. Rawley picks up the win with an Alabama Slammer at 4 minutes and 15 seconds here. Tony, I know you have a differing opinion for me here, so I'm going to go ahead and let you be the first one to talk, because I want to hear what you say about this.
Well, yeah, it is different, but it's also surprising considering the type of person that I am and what I expect when I watch the show. But I think the reason why I'm starting to enjoy, well, I've enjoyed it for the past couple weeks, actually, is that it is simple. That's what I like. You know, I just talked about how I'm tired of wrestling cliche 101, and I feel like, I mean, this is a contradiction because this is kind of fitting that. But what I believe is that you have two people who either one of them, we don't care about. We don't care about either one of them, okay? Now, the problem is they're on the main roster. Even if we think that No Way Jose is not ready, he's on the roster. You have to use the tools that you're given. These two people are tools. I mean that in more ways than one. So if you're going to use them, if you're going to let them grow, then why not let them grow together? And if you're going to do that, give them time to do so. Now, a storyline like Sasha Banks and Bayley, we're getting tired of. And even today, I mean, I don't know what the hell happened over the past week, but they gave up on the smallest thing that people were interested in this feud and just threw it out the window. Now, you look at Mojo and No Way Jose, no one cares about these two. So you try to build something. And I think that's why I liked it, because Mojo's promo, not the first week, but the second week, I enjoyed because it made sense. It made sense to me. His line about saying, you have the opportunity to be on this show. You have the opportunity to lace up your boots and be in this ring, and you choose to do a fucking conga line. Like, I have put forth all my effort to be a wrestler, and I'm here, and I gotta watch you do this shit. To me, that's intriguing. To me, that's a good leg to stand on, and that's something that Mojo can build off upon. And I do feel that once he, you know, beat No Way Jose tonight, that he can be springboarded into something more interesting. He could cut a promo. His wrestling is kind of lacking, but of course, as a person who runs the show, you have one of two choices. Hold on, sorry.
Did we lose Tony? I was gonna say,
no,
did
I'm
we
right
lose
here.
Tony?
No. You have one of two choices, okay? You try your best to highlight the positives of the people that you have, such as, you know, Paul Heyman and ECW, or you let them flounder. And WWE lets people flounder so much, it's annoying, and it makes me wonder, why do you have these people on the roster? So I'm looking at Mojo, I'm looking at the tools that he has, the positive aspects of them, and I see him doing his best to use them. I can't get mad at that. I can't. He's not getting shoved down our throats. The segments aren't taking a bunch of time. He's doing what he can to grow from that. No Way Jose, I'm still not sold. I think he's just a, you know, another Adam Rose, which, you know, he's not the first, he's not the last. But Mojo, I don't know. I think just that promo alone really helped me engage, and like I've said many, many times, it also helped me relate. I get where he's coming from. Even though it's fake and it's written, I get where he's coming from, and I think that alone is a big deal to me. I've mentioned it many times. So seeing it come into play, it's like, yeah, the match is kind of sucked. Yeah, this isn't the best feud. It's not lighting the world on fire. But I think if done right, the momentum that Mojo can get from this can turn him into something else. And that's the main reason why I'm okay with what's going on, and why I'm not going to just readily, you know, blow it off and say, can this feud end already? Because I think that that's a detriment to everything that we complain about on a weekly basis. You know what I mean?
Well, I will say that I do think that Mojo is definitely coming off as the star of this feud, and that was probably the intention here, since I think they realize that No Way Jose is nothing but an opening act, an establishment act, in order to use him to help get other people over, kind of the old-school JTTS style of guys that they used to have in the mid to late 90s, 94, 95, 96 era. That being said, though, when it comes to Mojo, I would rather not see him wasted on a guy like a No Way Jose here, when he's showing these flashes of brilliance, both when he won the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, as well as in this nothing feud with No Way Jose. as I feel there are better and brighter spots in the mid card on Monday Night Raw, especially that he could be filling. And he's just wasting his time and my time by having him feud with a guy like No Way Jose, whose ceiling is very limited in this gimmick. Andrew?
Yeah, but with that logic, you're also kind of running into the same issue that a lot of people had with the Jinder Mahal situation and people that are vaulted too quickly without paying their dues or going from jobber or obscurity to suddenly you get a title shot when it's not an open challenge and people just sit there and go, well, fucking why? So I like that Mojo is being built in the undercard, so to speak, especially since we found out that Fandango's hurt for a few months. Tyler Breeze could easily come into a feud with Mojo, and, you know, Mojo can continue this whole, you're just a stupid gimmick, why are you not being, you know, a serious wrestler when you lace up the boots and you walk in the ring like everybody else and you want to run around playing, you know, fashion cop like a fucking idiot. So he could really take that and run with it, and he needs a thing. That's kind of what lots of people also complain about with the current crop of WWE superstars is nobody has a defined personality. They're just a guy who does moves or a guy with a dumb moniker like The Guy or The Man or The Architect or, you know, Finn Balor's, you know, Balor Club for Everyone, or Bobby Roode is just the theme song Glorious. Like, nobody is defined as, oh yeah, Stone Cold, he's that badass who drinks beer and beats the shit out of you and flips you off. You can't really just define a lot of the guys nowadays with a couple quick, you know, qualifiers or pronouns and then just be like, oh yeah, you mean this guy. Like, unless you're in the know, the jokes of Big Dog or Believe That, like, no one knows who the hell you're talking about. No one cares. Like, just go, oh, Roman? Yeah, whatever. So, I kind of like what they're doing with Mojo. Is it kind of boring? Yes, because it's simple. But it's nice in its simplicity, so I'm with Tony on that one.
Yeah, and you don't want to put Mojo up with someone that is already better than him as far as name value, because you're not building Mojo. Mojo will be looked at immediately as a jobber. I mean, what I feel is this really takes it back to how wrestling, what I think, used to be built up. You had a legitimate undercard. You had a fluidity between the undercard, the upper card, and then the main event. You had this nice little, you know, well, I've seen this guy wrestle. I've seen him beat some ass. Yeah, that makes sense that he gets an IC title shot. That makes sense that he's going to be profiled next week. Whereas you see people like Jinder just get thrown in there, and you're like, that doesn't work for me in my head. I don't understand that. How does that make sense? You look at Mojo and No Way Jose, and if Mojo comes out of this looking better than he did 4 weeks ago, which he admittedly already does, then that's the next progressional step for this character. Mojo is tired of these bullshit-ass people. He's tired of all this, so he's going to grow from it. He's going to be something out of it, and he's going to face someone that does matter eventually. You know he is, but don't start that way, especially if you have what is considered a blank slate. No one knows really who Mojo is. He's the hype man, but that's gone. That's been erased. So now that he's a new character, how do we get him to the next step, to the next level? This is the type of writing where it's so easy, so simple, and it's even using the cliches and the wrestling 101 properly. It's not just saying, let me take this out of a hat and adhere it to this feud. You know, Sasha versus Bayley should be a fucking blood feud where they are hating each other, and we're getting comedy segments last week sitting on a couch bickering because they're women this week. Like, that doesn't work. You're applying your tools to the wrong issue. You don't use a hammer to fix a pillow. You know, that doesn't make sense. You don't do that. So, and that's one of the biggest issues with WWE. It's like, well, what do we do this week? We have 5 weeks. What are we going to do this week? Oh, you know what? We haven't had a pull apart. Let's do that. That usually hypes it up. I really feel like that's how the meetings go sometimes, and that's horrible.
And speak for yourself. Andrew, if that pillow's lumpy, it's getting a hammer.
Andrew, I feel like if we ever did T-shirts here, you don't use a hammer to fix a pillow would be one of the very first ones we did.
That is not a bad one. I agree with that.
Sasha Banks and Bayley are still in counseling, and they got rid of the one thing that made me interested in counseling. Bayley's dancing. She does not dance at all this week. It's very sad. Andrew and
Agreed.
I were having this conversation last week. They have a new counselor now, and apparently, continuing the theme of bitches be crazy, it's now a woman. Bayley does express concerns that she always has Sasha's back, but Sasha never has hers. She's too busy stabbing her in the back. We see a couple more segments between these two throughout the show, but no real express time spent on those segments here, and definitely nothing to the level of the amount of screen time that these segments got last week here. Are they just biding their time until we get past Extreme Rules to focus on this, like the announcers insinuated, or do they even not know where the fuck they're going with this coming?
No, look, this is what happened. They created something. Maybe Dr. Shelby couldn't show up. Maybe he couldn't film another week or some extra footage. Maybe they messed up, they watched the playback and it didn't work. The girls had to change their clothes. For all we know, this could have all been filmed in one day. You know, they just changed their outfit. We're good to go. Put my ponytail a little bit further to the side. Let's go. But now what you did was what the one speaking part that Bayley had gave us no new information. It's something that her and Corey Graves have been saying over and over and over again. So no new information to me means there's no reason to see them. Now, that doesn't mean take them off the show. That means that you're not doing your fucking job. You're not creating something for us. You're not telling us what's going to happen next. You started off with a beatdown. Bayley fucked Sasha up, screamed in her face, you ain't shit, and then walked away like a badass. And now we're in counseling, and they're sitting next to each other on a couch bickering, and we can't even... What they're saying is so uninteresting and unnecessary that we don't even need to hear it. Because for whatever reason, their decision to make Michael Cole and Corey Graves their voice more important than the two women who we're supposed to be invested in is the decision that they went for. Why did they make that decision? Why do we go that route? Why do we see them talking and pretend we're playing WWE 2K17 where we don't actually get to hear what they're saying? We just see the movements and the head shapes as if that's what we're paying for or that's what we want. That's not how it works. So, yeah, once again, I didn't agree with Dr. Shelby showing up. I didn't agree with his placement in this storyline. It made zero sense to me, and it did not work. But people liked it. They liked the hype. They liked the presence of him. They liked the idea. The one thing that made people interested in this segment, you removed. Now there's nothing. There's no animosity. There's no anger. There's no vitriol from either women. There's nothing to latch onto. You have went from badass Bayley beating down Sasha Banks to some fucking couch talk that we can't even hear.
Andrew?
Yeah, I don't really have anything different to add to that. Like, it's just a shit segment at the moment. We'll probably get the payoff in a week or two on a Raw, but you can't really do anything at Extreme Rules with that, though.
I mean, they do have 5 hours to get through Sunday, so maybe they find some time for it on there in the arena. We'll see what ends up happening there. Seth Rollins is backstage, and he runs into Jinder Mahal, who's working on his Shanti gimmick, which I'm assuming is like the Indian for Namaste or something. I'm not entirely sure. He tells Rollins that he needs to stop creating devastation and burning things down and embrace peace. Rollins considers it and asks for help in meditating with Mahal. Mahal begins his chanting, and Seth exits stage left a la Snagglepuss. This brings us to in-ring promo time for Seth Rollins, where he talks about his Intercontinental title matchup against Dolph Ziggler at Extreme Rules in the 30-minute Iron Man match. Dolph and Drew come out to interrupt. Dolph shit-talks him, saying that he's going to win this match. The question is, how is he going to win this match? Will it be 5-0, 10-0, 100-0 even? They trade amateurish barbs back and forth, with Rollins focusing on Drew McIntyre, including making a comment about him fucking sheep, which we will get to in a second, before we end up getting to Rollins versus McIntyre for later on in the show, with the added stipulation that if Seth Rollins defeats Drew McIntyre, McIntyre will be banned from ringside on Sunday, whereas if McIntyre wins, then he will be allowed at ringside. All right. So this segment got a lot of conversation in our group chat, and I'm going to go ahead and go first here because there's just something I need to get off my chest about this here. How goddamn stupid do you think we are? Like, how dumb do you think your fans are that a joke about Drew McIntyre fucking stupid going to land with us? Now, I'm sure there's some backwards hillbilly in some state that I don't even want to mention the name of that's probably sitting there looking at his television going, fuck sheep. But to the rest of us, the only thing you're really doing is insulting our intelligence. Why can't you just have this match as what the actual match ended up being? We'll talk about the match in full detail. Actually, we might as well discuss the match right now since we're talking about it. The match is the two of them going back and forth, busting each other's ass, trying to get the best match possible between them because these guys went out there to deliver, and deliver they did. But you're setting this up on the premise of the accusation that Seth Rollins says that Drew McIntyre fucks sheep and that Dolph Ziggler can't get anything done without Drew McIntyre's help, rather than having this be about the two of the most athletically gifted men on your roster going out there and tearing it up at your main event. Andrew, I'm going to get your thoughts on first the segment and then the match here. Why do you think it is they went with the LCD booking here, the lowest common denominator?
Well, what do you expect? You know, we just had a porta potty fucking scene last week. I mean, I think as me and Tony talked about last week and how there's been multiple different iterations of people feeding it to... Damn it, Tony, will you stop fussing with your papers or whatever you're doing? But anyway, as many people have said, Vince has a very sophomoric kind of sense of humor. So he probably saw the joke about, you know, fucking sheep and, you know, getting knocked over in a porta potty, and he probably signed off on it because he finds it funny himself. So I'm not surprised it was there. I just, it's a stupid line. Like, as we said in our group chat, like, the first thing that really struck me as ironic was Seth Rollins trying to tell somebody else to make sure they didn't have photos of something somewhere, when it's just a couple years ago we got to see that I'm pretty sure it wasn't cold when Seth Rollins took those pictures, but, you know, you couldn't tell if you looked at them. So, let's not go there, but then it comes down to fucking sheep, and it's like, oh... fucking fantastic. But oh, also just to pay our dues to cultural respect and everything, Shanti means peace. So it's something that people say during meditation, and I think it's derived from Hindu or Buddhist, where you say Shanti, Shanti, Shanti three times to kind of bring peace to your body, your mind, and your soul. So, namaste is just hello, basically. So to totally different things. So let's not insult anybody's religion or, you know, ethnic background with yeah. American ignorance.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure namaste is the Indian word for namaste. So
I was just clarifying that namaste is just hello. Shanti has more meaning to that. It's like peace.
Yeah, no.
So
that was in response to Harry saying that it was the Indian word for namaste. But
I'm aware. So anyway, the match was fine. Like it was probably one of the better wrestled main events that they've had in a few weeks. There were still some parts of the match I wasn't really super fond of, but I did really like Ziggler finally showing up to interfere like a heel should, and the fact that Ziggler ate the blackout, the stomp, the whatever the hell we're calling it now, and McIntyre got the somewhat clean win, because still nobody's ever touched Seth. They just kind of cause a distraction on the outside and Seth pays them attention, so some of it should kind of be put on him for getting distracted. But yeah, the match was pretty damn good, and the setup was just fucking elementary school awful. Like Tony, give me your post.
Well, yeah, the promo, you know, what bothered me was that it was inconsistent with what we've seen of the character Seth Rollins. He's not that guy. That's never been Seth Rollins. So it made no sense to me. It really felt like we got you a different writer this week. This is how he does things. So go ahead and say what you got to say. That's it. And then I mentioned it a little bit earlier in the group chat where Dolph Ziggler, he's not as funny as he thinks he is. I know he does stand-up in different places. I know he does things where, you know, he is humoristic, and I've seen a couple of YouTube things with his brother and him. He's not that funny. And what the problem is when you have that arrogance and you show, like, I don't believe that everything he said tonight was written word for word because it fell off the rails. That segment, I'm not saying if you're a writer because I think you two can kind of see it as well, so I'm not going to put the cloud all on me, but you can kind of tell that it was unraveling a bit and it had to be brought back to earth. It was kind of going places where it just wasn't working. And Dolph had to, like, expound upon something, flub his line, and then go back to the whole tiny, tiny, tiny thing, which probably would have been better placed if they, you know, were to insult Seth's picture-taking skills. So what ends up happening is it's disjointed, it's unbelievable, it's no longer real, so you just back up a little bit. And that's what happened with that promo. And then he goes and talking about sheep-fucking. And, I mean, I just don't think that's funny anywhere. Whoever does, apparently some laughing dude in some state that we don't know, I find zero value to that. And again, that's not what this storyline has been built upon. It's been built upon amazing wrestling. I'm better than you. Drew's better than you. Drew's probably better than me, but I'm not going to say it because I'm Dolph Ziggler. Where the fuck did the sheep come from? Why are you in putting that in here when it doesn't belong? There's certain moments for that. And even those moments, of course, we're not going to like it, but it makes sense in that moment. It didn't make sense tonight, so it came off as crappy and annoying and stupid. With regards to the match, as awesome as it was, there was quite a few moments where I felt that they were obviously stalling for time. And that becomes annoying because if you're going to do that, I mean, yeah, you might as well put a fucking pitcher Extreme Rules commercial while you have the eighth rest hold that Drew McIntyre is putting on. You can explain it in wrestling terms. You're trying to wear down your opponent. You want to keep Seth Rollins grounded. You want to, you know, put as much damage as you can for the pay-per-view that's in fucking 6 days. But it gets to a point where it's like, all right, I get it. You're trying to work the left arm, but that has nothing to do with what you're going to do later, so it's kind of annoying. But the match itself was amazing. That's literally my only complaint, is that too many rest holds. It's what the WWE does. That's the WWE style. You have to have at least 5 chin locks or a variation of. But once you get rid of that, and once you, like, chill and realize that that's just a part of it, you get to enjoy a really good match with a really good ending. Dolph fighting in the ring and getting curb stomped was beautiful, and Drew winning is just icing on the cake, because if there's someone to build this company around, if you're looking for that next big thing, I think Drew has it. And guess what? He won't have to be like Roman Reigns. But I think that that's their new template, so it's only a matter of time.
The fact that he is like Roman Reigns is what I fear may end up working against him in the long run. That people are naturally, organically getting behind McIntyre, and Vince is like, not on my watch, God damn it.
Sometimes you can't fight it.
Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel are cosplaying. Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel are cosplaying in their Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt outfits when they end up coming down to the ring for the next contest, a singles match between Hardy and Dallas. They are interrupted in their attempt to have a promo in the ring by the video form of Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy. And then when the lights go out in the arena and come back on, Hardy and Wyatt are at ringside, apparently freaking out Wyatt and Dallas and Axel. The match itself happens, and yet again we see another member of the B team picking up a pinfall victory in a singles match over one half of the tag team champions. And this time it's Bo Dallas who pins Matt Hardy with a total anarchy rope assisted swinging neckbreaker at approximately 8 minutes here. Tony, you were mentioning something here that I wanted to get more of an expansion upon here. The overselling of one Bo Dallas, what do you mean? Because I personally didn't.
Yeah, I don't know if it was just me, or maybe it was just his wet hair flinging back so harshly. And maybe I'll watch the match again to see if I could change my mind. But I felt like every move that Matt hit, Bo was acting a little bit too crazy. Like, it hurt him a little too much. He flopped too hard. And I don't know. Like, it just threw me off a little bit. Like, what is this? Has this always been Bo Dallas? I don't know, because he never has actual matches. But it just looked like a little off. It also looked like, again, like their winning is just a fluke. Because either Matt is so powerful that he could beat Bo's ass the way he did tonight, or there is an actual equality there, and you may have to worry about these guys. But, of course, that's not the story that they've been telling over the past few weeks. They've been telling the story that this B team has been getting progressively lucky over and over again, and they might get lucky this Sunday. I don't feel like that's the right way to build certain people. But, no, to answer your question, I'll be more than happy to check the match out again. But it strongly felt visually like he was just overselling a bit too much.
Andrew, did you see the same thing Tony did?
I saw it to a degree, but I also saw that Matt Hardy's aggression was kind of cranked up a bit more than we've seen lately. So
true.
I'm not sure if that was Bo trying to get across that Matt was more aggressive and less goofy and jovial than he has been because he's been on the receiving end of fluky losses. But, yeah, I mean, it didn't bother me, and it didn't take me out of the match, really. It's just the match, I don't know. To be completely honest, the first thing that caught my attention with this, the whole promo beforehand and in the ring, I didn't get a good look at it, but what the fuck was that on Bray Wyatt's hand? Was it, like, a splint over, like, his pinky or his thumb? Because I just saw, like, random flashes of red on his hand, and I'm like, is that a splint? Is that from the car accident? Did, you know, what the fuck is that? Did anybody else see that one?
I can't say I noticed, no.
Tony?
Okay.
I'm just making sure you didn't fall asleep is all. But, so I think that was just distracting me a little bit, but I don't know. When you bring it all together, the story for this one really just seems like they're trying to drive home that together Hardy and Wyatt are stronger than the B team, but individually the B team has a shot. So that lends credence to the whole they could fluke themselves into a win depending on who's in the ring or if they can, you know, finagle something to happen, which you expect from an up-and-coming team who's been jobbers for the last, year and a half or however long they were the Miztourage, and now suddenly they're on a winning streak just because they changed their name and makes a difference. So, it's a comedy match to a degree, so what do you expect? Like, you can't expect a lot of serious storytelling and quote-unquote wrestling elements from a somewhat comical storyline.
Backstage, Bobby Lashley gets interview time saying that he has respected everyone that he stepped in the ring with so far in his return to the WWE, everyone that is except for Roman Reigns. He does say that he likes that Roman is willing to fight him, but on Sunday, Roman will not walk out. Believe that. Uh-huh. Roman said basically the same thing a little bit later on in the show as well, so yahoo, tit for tat. Good job, guys. Tyler Breeze, apparently on his own now that Fandango's out for up to 6 months, tries to approach the Riot Squad, telling them that they need fashion pointers. Sarah and Liv proceed to blow him off, tearing up the t-shirts that he gave them, and making their way out to ringside for our next contest, which will be a singles match, a rematch from last week, as Ember Moon once again takes on Liv Morgan. A real quick Alexa Bliss segment about the match with Nia Jax at Extreme Rules happened right before the Ember Moon and Liv Morgan match, and Alexa points out that she's glad that overhyped rookie Ronda Rousey will be at ringside in Pittsburgh. So me thinks that the odds are of the Alexa Bliss Ronda Rousey SummerSlam match are probably going for it with an Alexa retain. We'll do more predictions here in a little bit, but I'm just throwing that one out early. Our next contest, which is scheduled for one fall, is Ember Moon and Liv Morgan, and the Ember over Liv Morgan. This time with a jackknife cradle off of an attempt by Morgan on a sunset flip at 7 minutes and 57 seconds. Andrew? Anything?
I mean, it wasn't a bad match at all. And I know Tony and I brought it up last week, and I still kind of attest to it, that before last week's match against Liv, Ember kind of doesn't have a second gear or a half gear. She always kind of comes in a little too intense, a little too hyped up, and it has a tendency to make a match look awkward. It happened a lot in NXT. It happened a lot her first couple matches on the main roster. But there's something between her and Liv Morgan where Ember seems to dial it back like a half a notch or whatever you want to call it, and they actually don't work poorly together. Like, Liv doesn't get a lot of times to shine, and she gets overshadowed by everybody else on the roster almost, but Ember and her work well together. Liv had a couple nice little spots with the Matrix moment and a few things that gave you hope, like that springboard face buster that she kind of spiked Ember on, and it gave you hope that, you know, that maybe Liv could pull off the upset. But, you know, the good guy won at the end, but the match was actually pretty fine. Like, I had no issues with it.
Tony, your thoughts on the rematch between Ember and Liv Morgan?
Yeah, sure, whatever. I mean, they have nothing else to do. You want to keep Ember in the forefront of the television audience, so you got to put her out there. Liv and Sarah are going to be in limbo until Ruby comes back, and I don't know how long that's going to be. So they have to either A, do something, or B, go back down to NXT, which I don't think anyone ever has, except for, like, you know, some old-timers. So I don't... similar to Mojo and Rose, like, this is just, you know, we're getting these people primed for a better spot.
That's a fair assessment, in my opinion. I definitely think that Ember's going to end up being one of the sooner rather than later challenges for the Raw Women's title. But a lot of that is going to depend on how the whole Alexa, Nia, Ronda, Rousey thing plays out this Sunday.
True.
Finn Balor is interviewed backstage, and Bobby Roode arrives to help him complete his interview. Renee Young completely misses the Victorious reference. It's okay, though, because she said Bobby Roode proceeds to say that they will be glorious in their victory a little bit later on in the evening. We see the segment with Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler and Kurt Angle here. We already discussed that earlier. Andrew, I want you to go first here, because it is Elias performing in the ring, and then he is joined by Baron Corbin, and you said words that I'm not sure I can ever tolerate in the group chat that we have, so I want to go ahead and get an explanation here.
Hey, these are words that multiple people have said lately, and it's surprising. Like, I think even Tony's been a little less visceral towards Corbin. And even, you know, the great Greg DeMarco, the publisher at thechairshot.com, has started to soften on his Baron Corbin sucks kind of angle. A little bit. Shut up. But even he started to soften on the Baron Corbin sucks thing. So it worked wonderfully. Like, you know, Elias had a nice song. It worked really well. He buried Boston like he usually does using the accent. And even when Corbin comes out and flubs the word lullaby, it was almost saved, because then he kind of just built off of the whole, oh yeah, the accent threw me off or whatever. It's dumb as hell, but it's a good heel move to do, to just kind of like brush off the stupidity. And then, sure, it's still the big and small thing, which I think we joked about last week, that was just a carryover from, you know, Kaz got fired, so somebody else had to do it, so they gave it to Corbin and Balor, but Corbin does it better. And Itsy Bitsy Balor was amusing. It was poorly sung, obviously, and a little stupid, but like that's the level of like juvenile humor that I can still find appreciation for, because you know that just panders to just simplicity, and it's like Itsy Bitsy because he's tiny and Balor, and it flowed decently. It was a good heel segment.
All right, I want the record to state that I've actually been on the Baron Corbin bandwagon for a while here, but I thought that the segment that he had with Elias tonight was just dumb. Itsy Bitsy Balor does nobody any favors. Corbin's been hyping on the same thing for week after week after week, and I know you guys are saying that it's kind of the carry-through of the Cass and Bryan situation, and to an extent, I can see that, but at the same time, there are other things that Stooge Corbin could be doing rather than focusing on this one-versus-bout mentality that he has been. The match itself, which follows the tag match between Constable Corbin and Elias taking on the team of Balor and Rude, where Corbin picks up the win on Rude with the End of Days in about 13 minutes, 10 of which was shown. I actually liked the idea of Corbin getting a win going into the match with Balor at the pay-per-view, especially getting the win on Rude, since Rude doesn't have anything currently announced for Sunday here. Tony, what were your thoughts on this segment as well as the tag match?
Yeah, it was fine. I think the best part was that Corbin was able to successfully recover, and that's very difficult to do. You know, once you flub up, it's really hard for you to say, like, oh, shit. And he did it in such a heelish manner that it was like, you know what, man? Respect for that. Elias continues to reinvent himself even while doing the same thing on a weekly basis. Little things like changing the tune of the song just works. It makes it last. You know, saying he's going to drop an album soon gets me excited, and I don't even know why. Corbin getting a win makes sense. The dude is becoming more and more. He is now fitting a role that is fitting of him, as opposed to trying to create this lone wolf image, which no one bought or cared for. I stand by strongly that when he lost his hair, he gained talent.
So, like, he's like the anti-Samson?
Sure.
And I think the reason that you're so excited about Elias dropping an album is because you put up with Enzo Amore and Leo Rush's singles.
Oh, Enzo. I had such high hopes for that, man.
Tony's review of those tracks available on 411.com/music. Show. Anywho.
Hey, you know what else is available on 411mania.com? This week's addiction edition of Fact or Fiction.
Or as I like to call it, Circle Jerk on Paper. Yeah, Circle Jerk on Paper.
You're in that
man.
By yourself, Tony.
That is how big my ego is. I need to agree with myself multiple times.
Proud of you.
Kevin Owens backstage when Braun Strowman finally shows up 2.5 hours into the fucking broadcast. Angle says that he invited Strowman into his office to officially let both of them know that since Kevin took a hike during their scheduled match last week, they're going to have a rematch at Extreme Rules on Sunday, and it will be a steel cage match. Strowman then grabs the can of aerosol spray, Lysol, whatever the fuck it was that Kevin Owens had in order to spruce the place up, and sprays Owens with it because he reeks of fear. I see what you did there. The previously mentioned Roman Reigns interview is here as well. I talked about that when I mentioned Lashley's interview. But since we've already covered all that, that takes us to our main event, which we touched on earlier in the show, and that brings us to an end for this episode of Monday Night Raw. Do you guys want to do the final reaction here, or do you want to do it after predictions?
I mean, you know my feeling. I like to get the final reactions out of the way to keep it together.
All right, well, in that case, why don't we go ahead and go into this then? Favorite match or moment on the evening, Andrew?
Oh, that has to be the main event. Like, I don't think anything else could really be that close unless you were significantly tickled by something.
Like you were with Baron Corbin singing Itsy Bitsy Balor?
I wasn't that tickled. The main event was still better than that.
How about you, Tony? Favorite match or moment?
Finn Balor diving across the ring to punch Baron Corbin during a pull-apart brawl.
Yes. I'm going to give it to the main event, but honorable mention to Tony's there because, yeah, Balor just straight up cold-cocking Corbin the way that he did make me chuckle. Greg Watry, Andrew, least favorite match or moment.
So many awkward things to pick from. You know what? I'm going to give this whole Kevin Owens, Braun Strowman kind of thing to Greg Watry. Because normally you put matches together because the people have heat. Owens wants nothing to do with this match. He gave him a win and can try to leave. So this just seems petty and just stupid. So I don't want to see this match at all. So yeah, the Kevin Owens, Braun Strowman thing.
Tony?
Yeah, that was definitely a close. I almost chose that one simply based off of the fact that there was conveniently a can of Lysol in front of Braun that was just there. And I love when wrestling TV does that. A thing that never exists prior to this particular moment suddenly is in existence simply to get over a joke that wasn't funny.
No, Owens introduced it earlier.
I was going to say... Owens was spraying it in Angle's office a little bit earlier in the show, so.
For no reason, since when? It was there. It was a setup for a joke that wasn't.
You don't
funny.
Have Lysol in your office?
It wasn't even an office. It was a sheet hanging up.
You
with
don't
a TV.
Know that. You don't
I
know
it.
That. They said it was an office. Maybe it's an office.
To be fair, Tony works
Kevin
so
Owens,
far, they might not have Lysol.
Kevin, we have plenty of Lysol. It's a bar.
I was about to say they need Lysol at the bar.
We have Lysol galore.
I don't know the kind of clientele they have.
I work in a very nice establishment, sir. Just because I'm not nice doesn't mean that the place I work at isn't.
Good
we
point.
We have an A rating, okay? My winner is, of course, the pull-apart brawl. It is the epitome of a Greg Watry moment because I am naming Greg Watry this unknown writer that puts bullshit on TV, and this pull-apart brawl was just that. It was so boring, so obvious, and such a trope that it's just like you can't come up with anything else. And then you got Lashley saying he respects wrestlers more than Roman Reigns, including Seth Rollins, who dressed up three dudes to pretend to be his sister. Like, who is Greg Watry? I hate you.
I'm going to give it to the Bayley-Sasha Banks segment here. What a colossal waste of fucking time those were.
That was
like
in my
Tony
consideration.
Earlier, it's like Tony said earlier, the one thing that people cared about with these segments that you gave them last week in Dr. Shelby is gone this week. The other thing that I cared about personally, as in Bayley dancing the way that she did, was gone this week as well. So what the fuck do I have to care about this segment for? Scale of 1 to 10, Andrew.
I'm going to give it a 5.5. It was mostly averaged. Anything that they used to kind of push a storyline forward was, as Tony has beaten into the ground, kind of cliche and rudimentary and just tropey and paint by numbers. And the half point basically is just all for the main event, that it actually was pretty decent and unique in a degree and just a good match. So, yeah, I'm going 5.5.
Tony?
Solid 4. Just like Seth Rollins. Ho, ho, ho!
Thank you, Bret Hart.
Womp, womp, womp.
That was also
a
penis joke.
Yeah, I'm aware, hence the Price is Right horn. I'm going to give the show a 6. I had it right around the 5 level that Andrew had it at. I was just a little bit more impressed by the main event than he was, so I gave it a full bonus point for that main event and put it up to a 6 rather than a 5.5. Who's your MVP, Andrew?
Ooh, MVP.
No, I'm gonna.
I'm gonna give it to Drew I'm gonna give it to Drew McIntyre. I don't
Tony?
Think I need to expand because we've talked about that for a while.
Tony.
Yeah, Drew for sure.
I'm going to complete the trifecta and give mine to McIntyre as well. He stood out in the main event. And in addition, the backstage promo that he had with Kurt Angle was really well done as well, where he showed Ziggler started to freak out over the potential of McIntyre not being at ringside for his match with Rollins on Sunday. McIntyre was like, make the match. I ain't scared of this bitch. I'm paraphrasing, of course.
Uh-huh.
And that'll wrap up. That'll wrap up the July 9th edition of Monday Night Raw. We now go into our predictions for this Sunday's Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Gentlemen, I hereby break the news to you that I teased a little bit earlier in the show. When we open next Monday's episode of The Reaction with our final reaction for Extreme Rules, I will have live thoughts to share with you. I will be in Pittsburgh this Sunday night, Section 201, Row F for Extreme Rules.
Well, ain't that something?
So I will have some live thoughts to share with you guys, as well as a live perspective for the final reaction that we do to open next week's episode of the Raw Reaction. With that being said, what do you say we get into our predictions for the pay-per-view?
Oh, yeah, we're doing that, huh?
Balor and Corbin, Tony.
Probably Corbin.
Andrew?
See, wrestling logic would make you say Balor because Corbin got the win and he looked good on top, and Balor's kind of been on the losing end of a lot of things. You know what? I'm going to say Balor because Corbin doesn't really need the win because his new position kind of gives him that weird power to just, you know, insert himself as he pleases. So, yeah, I'm going to go Balor.
That's what she said.
Kick.
I'm picking Balor as well. I think Balor needs to win more. I think that Raw is kind of a lack of upper card baby faces in this show. With the exception of Seth Rollins, there really isn't anybody at the upper card babyface level. Don't try to tell me Roman's a babyface, he's not. Don't try to tell me Bobby's a babyface, he's not. So, with the exception of Seth Rollins, there are no real high-level babyfaces on the upper card for Monday Night Raw, and I think Balor could use this win in order to help establish himself into that level there. Speaking of Roman, his match is up next. It is Roman Reigns versus Bobby Lashley. Tony?
Roman Reigns is going to win.
Andrew?
The Samoan Sex Machine.
I'm picking Bobby Lashley because I think that they're not anywhere near done with this. There's a rematch the following month at SummerSlam with some kind of added bonus stipulation between these two. Speaking of stipulations, it is a steel cage match as Braun Strowman takes on Kevin Owens. Tony?
Yeah, poor Kevin. He's trying so hard. I don't see how he's going to beat... Well, you know what? Since it's a cage match, I'm going to pick Kevin Owens because there's multiple ways to get out of it and piss off Braun. And as I've said before, if you got the briefcase, you're basically going to lose every single match you have until the moment you cash it in. So, yeah, Kevin Owens.
Andrew?
Yeah, my thinking's similar to Tony's, that Braun has to lose because he's got the briefcase and the match does allow for shenanigans, so might as well give it to Kevin.
It's a match that Braun can lose without having to eat a pinfall. Kevin Owens wins. Intercontinental title is on the line. 30-minute Iron Man rules. Dolph Ziggler defends against Seth Rollins. Tony?
I think that Dolph will retain. I don't think that they're going to give it to him just for him to lose it. I'm not really sure what happens after this, though.
Care to toss out a prediction for a final score?
No.
Way to play along with the bit, Tony. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Andrew?
I don't want to see Dolph lose the title because I don't want it to go back on Seth because I like where Drew and Dolph are going. And there's enough rumors to substantiate that Ambrose is supposed to be back soon. So that could be a way to kind of shenanigans things, that Ambrose comes out to make it seem like he's evening up the score in support of Seth and then screws over Seth and goes back to heel Ambrose, and that immediately throws them into a feud that would probably be pretty solid for SummerSlam. So there we go. That's my little bit of fantasy booking to justify Dolph winning. And fine, I'll play along with the final score, and I'll say 3-2.
Stole my final score, stole my winner. Ziggler retains the title 3-2. I don't know that Ambrose gets involved here, but now that we know that McIntyre will be at ringside, I think he does, and Dolph retains 3-2. The U.S. title is on the line as Jeff Hardy defends against Shinsuke Nakamura, Tony.
Shinsuke's another dude that I feel kind of bad for. I don't think he's going to win the title. I answered this in Fact of Fiction over at 411mania.com.
So he's picking Jeff.
Yeah.
Andrew?
I'm begrudgingly picking Shinsuke because you have him in a main event scene with AJ. Have him be this big badass. Have him win the Rumble. Have him positioned so well. Two-time NXT champion. He's going to be facing AJ again for some god-awful reason tomorrow. And now, put a belt on him. God damn it. Like, if he loses to Hardy, what the hell does that say? Where does he go? Like, I think Shinsuke kind of needs this. So just, I'm going to pick Shinsuke begrudgingly.
I'm non-begrudgingly picking Shinsuke to win this year because I think Shinsuke having the U.S. title would open a lot of possibilities for Shinsuke to have some of the matches that we feel he should have been having on Monday Night Raw. Or on SmackDown, excuse me. Sorry, had a moment there.
Yes,
all right, continue. Yeah, you've seen one, you've seen them both. SmackDown Women's title sees Carmella defending against Asuka. Stipulation to be determined, probably to be announced this Sunday. Or this Tuesday or Sunday. I'm fucking this all up. Tony, give me a prediction, will you?
I don't know. I don't feel like anything's going to change this particular pay-per-view because we're getting ready for SummerSlam, so Carmella's going to keep the belt.
Did you hear who he picked, Andrew? Because I didn't.
I think he said keep the belt, which means Carmella, but it sounded like he was saying it from underwater. So I can only assume.
Tony, confirm Carmella?
Sure.
Thank you.
There we go.
Andrew?
Better. Again, this is a begrudging one because I feel like Asuka's a little better protected than Shinsuke, so saying this has to happen, I guess, isn't quite as big of a situation or as bad of a situation as I see Shinsuke in. But you can't have Asuka lose again, especially most likely straight up, because she's probably going to kill James Ellsworth tomorrow, or the Lumberjacks are going to kill him, and then he's going to come out like in a wheelchair and a body cast, so... You can't let Carmella win that match. You can't. I mean, they could. I could see it. But I'm going to go with Asuka out of pure bias because she's adorable.
Yeah, I think Carmella's had her run with the briefcase, and now the time for the belt to go over to somebody that actually can handle it properly. I think Carmella has improved leaps and bounds, and the fact that she still has a job out of her, Cassie Enzo, is stunner to most people here. But Asuka with the title and being chased by the returning Charlotte for SummerSlam is probably the way that they go here. I think Asuka wins the belt. The Raw Women's title is on the line in an Extreme Rules match as Alexa Bliss defends against Nia Jax. They've made it crystal clear that Ronda Rousey would be at the show on Sunday. How does this play into your decision, Tony?
I'm pretty sure she'll hop over the barricade and get involved. I just don't know when. Nia Jax is not going to win.
That's him picking Alexa. I think.
Yes, it is.
Andrew?
I'm going to go no contest on this one because I don't think you can legitimately have Alexa beat Nia, and you can't have Nia just squash figuratively and literally Alexa again. So I think something stupid's going to happen. There we go. There's your fat joke insinuation. But, you know, I don't think you can do that, so Rhonda's going to get involved somehow. Maybe Nia's going to accidentally throw Alexa onto Rhonda or into Rhonda, or maybe Mickey's going to run her mouth and piss her off and get her to jump the guardrail, and then shenanigans will happen. But, yeah, I'm going to go no contest.
I think Alexa retains, and then her and Rhonda get into it after the match in order to set up the SummerSlam Women's title match. Back over to SmackDown for the SmackDown Live Tag Team titles as the Bludgeon Brothers defend against the reunited Team Hell No of Kane and Daniel Bryan. And I will say real quick, since we don't usually talk about SmackDown on this show, the Usos coming out and confronting Team Hell No, and Jimmy asking Jay for a series of hugs and then saying that he just guaranteed themselves four tag team title shots talked me tremendously. I thought that was a great line. Who do you got, Tony?
Bludgeon Brothers. Team Hell No is just a little gift for us, but they're not going to be taking the belts anywhere.
Andrew?
Yeah, I'm on the Bludgeon Brothers train. I don't see that happening again until Brian signs a contract extension.
Well, just as importantly, too, is I think you have the situation with The Miz and Daniel Bryan still looming large as well. So I could totally see The Miz getting involved here in order to set up SummerSlam if Bryan doesn't re-sign with the company, and then using SummerSlam to give us a payoff to the long-rumored Miz and Bryan match. Bludgeon Brothers retain. The Raw side of the tag team title division sees the leaders of Worlds, Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt, defending against the B-Team. Tony?
B-Team, yeah, I don't think they're going to win. They really haven't been built up as a threat. If they do win, it'll be a fluke win, and that doesn't help anybody. So I'm going to stick with Bray and Matt.
Andrew.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah, it's cool that they're trying to make Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel seem like something relevant, but they're not. Hardy and Wyatt retain and then go into a feud for the tag team titles with The Revival, who's now apparently newly reinvigorated on Monday Night Raw. And Dash and Dawson are apparently giving Kurt Angle shit on Twitter and causing Kurt Angle to take shots at his own show unwillingly. Do you see that shit, Andrew?
Yes, I saw that where they said, you know, we're on a roll, and Kurt Angle came back and said something like, you beat two guys that don't get along. What the hell do you mean you're on a roll? Shit, sit down and shut up or something like
that. You beat two guys that don't get along in a couple of meaningless tag team matches.
Yeah, there it is. That was the validation right there.
They were meaningless. Why did you make them?
That's kind of the point that The Revival made back to Kurt Angle, Tony. Kurt inadvertently buried his own show in the process, or at least his own writers. I mean, somebody needs to bury the Monday Night Raw writers on occasion, but it shouldn't be Kurt.
Why not? He's an Olympic gold medalist.
Our alleged main event is the only heavyweight title match on this show. Although Bobby Lashley and Roman Reigns is probably going to main event because fuck all of us. AJ Styles defends the SmackDown Live Heavyweight Championship, the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, against Rusev. Much though I would love it to be Rusev Day, Tony, is there any possibility of that actually happening?
I mean, yeah, there's a possibility. It's not going to happen, but it's a possibility.
That is Tony picking AJ Styles, Andrew. Pretty clear on that one.
It is pretty clear, and I can't disagree with it, because, you know, born and raised in the USA, AJ Styles, baby. Like, it's not going to be Rusev Day. Come on.
Rusev Day!
It's Rusev Day. But AJ Styles is winning. I'll be there front and center with my Rusev Day t-shirt on, but AJ Styles is winning.
Is Section 201 really front and center?
Well, I mean, technically I'll be right above the ring in Section 201.
Are you hard camera side?
I'm not sure. I'd actually have to look at the design of the building. I don't think so, though. I think I'm on the side where the camera is, not the side where the camera's facing.
I got you. So they might get you one of those crowd pans, but, you know, not directly. I get you.
I'll let you guys know if I make television or not, because I'm probably going to watch the show once I get home and see how it played out anyway. It's not like
fair enough. It's not like we're not going to watch it, so maybe we'll find out and we'll tell you if we saw you.
Here's hoping. Maybe I should have, like, a raw reaction sign or something. I'll see what I can put together. DeMarco made me bring this sign or something.
That would be good.
DeMarco, the pedophile from Pittsburgh.
Oh, God, don't go back to that.
That rat bastard still trying to control people from beyond the grave? How fucking dare he? Good to be back, guys. Missed you.
Yeah, enjoy Extreme Rules.
Yeah, definitely. Should be fun.
It's a pretty decent-looking card, despite the relatively lackluster episodes of Monday Night Raw that we've had to get there. But we've said that about a lot of the pay-per-views this year, and the pay-per-views have, by and large, been pretty good. So we'll see what ends up happening this Sunday here.
Yeah, let's not say pretty good. Let's just say better than the Raws. All right.
Let's say Money in the Bank was good.
Yes, Money in the Bank was good, yes. And I think, what was it? Fastlane was surprisingly good?
Backlash was okay.
Whoa,
well.
Yeah, okay. I don't think I agree there.
I might be stretching the truth a little bit with that one, because the opening match for Backlash was pretty good. After that, the show kind of went off a fucking cliff.
Yeah, so watch the first match and then fall asleep like Tony did the first time he tried to watch it, and then it's a fantastic fucking show.
For the third man, Andrew Ballas, and the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst, thanking you for listening to this week's edition of The Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Tony, send us home.
Deuces, bitches.
We share this need for comfort. That's plain to see. So show us where the pieces go, for you are we and we are parole. Will it sing? Will it fly? Will it fight for every breath it takes? Or will it wave goodbye? Will it tear?
Head.
This has been the Raw Reaction on the Chair Shot Radio Network for July 9th, 2018. Join Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Andrew Ballas as they present episode 14 of year 5 of the Raw Reaction next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. live on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you next Monday night.